sometimes I met Rio Ranson. I met him once.
Oh yes.
And his wife has absolutely no interest in that kind of stuff at all. You know.
Uh-huh.
I felt really sorry for him because he was stuck in this sort of spare room.
Yeah.
Like in a long cupboard, you know, with this little
treasury
of books.
Well, I don't bother with my hobby all that much. I generally start in September and work through on whatever project I've decided for the year, which last year incidentally was the Titanic. And
Sandstone 1 year.
Pardon?
Sandstone 1 year. Titanic next
That's
year.
That's right, yes. Sandstone 1 year. I look at Sandstone, read quite a bit about geology, and I was surprised. Once you got down into the detail of it, it was amazing how this story of how sandstone was made, if you got the real experts on it, they didn't know. Thank you. I'll tell you what, while I was at Cambridge, I was having a chat with one of the college tutors, and I was saying one of the things that had happened since I'd left Cambridge was that a lot of the stuff I'd learned, I now came to consider was incorrect. And he said, well, I'm just having to give us a set of lectures on, I think it was the kidneys, he was a physiologist. And he said that he'd written all these notes, and when he came to for his lecture, you see, because you have to give the lecture out, and when he'd written them out, he thought, you know, this can't be right. And but he says the only thing you can do is to give the lecture, because of course the students have to pass the exam, and the exam is set on a set thing in the beginning, you see. And he said, having given this lecture, one of his brighter students came along and said, you know, that can't be right. But the problem you always have is when you say it can't be right, as I say on sandstone, you know, the elementary story just can't be right.
Shall I make some proper coffee?
Oh, it doesn't matter what. I drink any coffee.
It's proper stuff.
Yeah. Until you've got an alternative,
yeah, that's right.
You're always in a bit of difficulties, you know. But my attitude is that, the alternatives, once you've said it can't be right, you look for the alternatives. Whether you find them or not, in my opinion, is irrelevant. You know, you just say, I found them.
Are you in touch with this physiologist chat much? I mean, do you know?
Oh no, never met him before in my life. I just met him at a Queen's
that's
dinner.
That's Harold Hillman's business.
Yeah.
He spent years on that. He's discovered about 10 different things. Very important, actually.
Yeah.
Very important. Hey, I think you're interested. There's a review of a book that I just got yesterday. It was in Nature.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's an edited book. It's about, I don't know how many contributions. It's a very crap review, actually, but poor old Hillman is really pounded in it. And there's a perpetual motion machine. It's a kind of review designed, calculated to insult the book. You know?
Yeah.
It's very unfair. He's thinking, he's wondering whether he should challenge the chap to a sort of intellectual duel. Right. These people tend not to actually rise to the bait, don't they?
Yeah.
Slide away, bastards. But physiology is really, really, it's full of corruption, actually. You know, this business.
Well, I'd say this was purely across the dinner table.
Hillman reckons that the model of the cell they had in 1890 was more accurate than the one they've got today.
Well, that's true.
It's not a joke. Harold works on all this kind of stuff. Cellular biology is important for things like arthritis.
Yeah.
Well, they've got nowhere with it.
Well, she would have been in a wheelchair 6 years ago if it hadn't been for surgery. You know, they put her a new knee in, but that's giving way now. But that's because the bones are giving way. So nothing much we can do about it.
Yeah, it's something with calcium metabolism or something like that.
I wouldn't know.
It's a shame. You could have done a grand tour. You could have visited Hillman on the way, and you could visit Cat as well, because he's around
Oh, he lives somewhere locally. Well, I've met him. He was
around the other side of the M25. He's on the north of the M25. You could have gone in at Guildford, then me, and then...
Oh, yeah.
Some grand tour.
No. No, well, out of all the people I've contacted, you've always been what I would call the most receptive. Cat, I didn't find particularly receptive.
He is self-obsessed, actually, as we said.
Yes.
He doesn't pay, which is a shame, because if he paid just a bit of attention, then people would take him more seriously.
That's right.
I mean, he didn't even understand your superfluid helium thing, for example.
Well, to me, I think that's the obvious one.
Well, yeah.
And when I contacted Lancaster University, they were very upset about it. And one of my old tutors was there as principal of, you know, one of the leading lights in the thing. And he said, you know, your superfluid helium has basically upset them. But they...
From the Cambridge University Microsoft.
Oh!
Seems appropriate, doesn't it?
Very good indeed.
Okay.
Where did you go to, by the way?
Right. I just went to Leicester.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
A dump, actually. I regret going there.
Uh-huh. Yes, milk,
right.
And milk and coffee.
Do you take sugar in?
No, I don't take sugar.
Are you going to take your wife one?
No, better not.
I'll take her a plate of cakes.
Well, I'll take her some cakes for her to eat en route. I'll
right.
Say these were the bits that were left for you. That's lovely.
You can't move it, but it's quite difficult to get out of a pee, isn't it?
Oh yes, yes. We travel with little chef maps so that we can go from one little chef to the next.
Yes. Yeah, but Cat is interesting. I mean, he does do good work by accident, really. I mean, for example, he was the first person known to me who got into this AIDS thing. You know, there's all these alternative theories. Like, have you heard this about AIDS? The whole thing is just a fraud. You know,
oh, I see. Yeah, no, I know.
Ah, very good book that Cat tracked down in America about it. And that's all coming to light, that was slowly behind us.
No, the biological side, other than the membrane, I've virtually done nothing on. And, you know, there's plenty of the other parts to do. And since I've taken up interest in clouds, which I think it was 1974 was the first time I realised...
As Cat did as well, Cat's a... Cat compares it with, he's got quite a nice little article comparing it to drug addiction.
No.
You know, you're offered this kind of stuff with the promise of things to come, which never materialise. It's quite a genius comparison. Do you think?
Pardon?
Do you agree? I don't know what your view is on that maths.
It's just a tool.
It's just a tool.
I don't use it very much at all. Certainly I'm not keen on making mathematical formulae to fit things. That's one of the things but when we're all said and done, you see, in that direction, all based on 1 + 1 = 1, which you know, once you get onto,
once you understand that,
you haven't got very far. You know, there's not much more you can do on the math side.
Why don't you rechristen it to get rid of the electron cloud thing?
Well, I've thought of that from time to time, but what do you rechristen it as? I mean, say really, it's only Dalton's atomic hypothesis with a new word in it.
Have you read up these people? Have you read Dalton?
Oh yes, I read, and that's how I knew it was the equivalent to what he had originally said.
It's good. Suppose people don't read the original stuff, do they?
No.
That's for good reason, usually. I mean, it's not
just. Don't like chucking this one. Thank you very much.
I wasn't sure whether you.
No.
Well, I know you might be a health magic.
Oh, good gracious, no. I might be queer, but I'm not that queer.
I was trying to visualise what you were like. I imagined you as being about 6 foot tall or something.
Oh, no.
Well, no, very sensible. You can't tell what people are like from their voices, can you?
No. This is what happened when they changed from radio to television. All these people you would imagine that weren't like that for sure.
That's a good point, yeah. Same with sound. Something similar happened with sound films, isn't it? All these actors who couldn't talk but look nice.
Sound.
How do you select your topic? Just kind of, I mean, it takes quite
9 times out of 10, if somebody comes in and asks me a question. That's why I looked at water in the first case. Somebody walked in the office and said, "Look, Phil, read yourself and a paper and tell me what you think."
Right.
What an interaction to it. He's dead to this guy who did that one.
So this is 1969 or something?
Yes, and then he just walked in the office. And another guy said, Look, I've been making lithium nitrate, says, and I can tell you categorically from all my experiments, well, no matter what anybody says, that the melting point and the freezing point are not the same. He says, I've done it once, I've done it dozens and dozens of times. He says, I can tell you they're not the same, and it's just not a matter of an odd degree. I forget what his difference between them. And so I said, okay, I'll look into it.
This is the anhydrous stuff, is it? It's just
a little bit, but I forgot.
It just melts. Yeah, it just melts in the warmest sense.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It was anhydrous. So I looked at that. When I looked through the rubber handbook to see whether this was, I found out there were lots of places where the rubber handbook announced that. Compounds had different melting points and freezing points. Obviously other people have found this, and it had even got into the books. Well, if they've found it and it's got into the books, you can imagine there might be dozens of places where they've found it and it's never got into the books.
It's a rubber handbook. I noticed you mentioned it several times.
Oh, it's the standard handbook of chemistry and physics. It's called Handbook of Chemistry and Physics. Was produced by some rubber company.
All right. A bit like Kay and Levy.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Perry, except full of tables instead of Perry with chemical engineer.
Amazing.
Right.
To work out the reason for it. Molecular rearrangements or sort of stuff.
No, quite simple. Just like water is an alloy, nearly all liquids are.
Lithium nitrate is an alloy.
When it's in the liquid phase, it is.
Yeah.
I used to make off the nitro toluene.
Yeah, I know it's bigger rather largely, you know.
Well, I used to make it just about a ton.
What do you use it for?
Yeah, nitro toluene and TNT. And also, the foam rubber was made out of it. And there are lots of intermediate chemicals. But when we made it in England, we always used to quote its setting point, which is its freezing point. And we quoted one figure.
The Germans had a different figure.
And the Germans had a different figure. And if you got the two, they got a bit of their crystals into your lab. It was amazing. We used to have to take about a week before we could get back to our own figures. And of course, from the lab point of view, this was a bit of a nuisance, because of course they were supposed to be checking it to see it was on the spot.
Is your wife so interested in this one?
Not really.
It's funny in chemistry.
No.
Chemistry.
She's interested in the family and the WI.
Right.
You know. Yeah, I've done chemistry since we got married.
Question. And that's how you got onto weather, presumably, as well.
Yeah, I just watched a film on there. I saw tornadoes, a year of tornadoes, which would be interesting. I didn't, I thought tornadoes were rare. Checking to the facts, there's about 1,000 a year, so I have plenty of raw material there.
That's mostly in America, though.
Oh, yes.
Not great really. Plains.
Yes, but there you've got plenty of observers. But when you get down to it, you see, you find out that people haven't, not many people have actually seen a tornado who wants to see. There was the program they held on the telly showed this Japanese man who came over to America to see tornadoes, and he hadn't seen one, and he spent years on it. He spent years on it, you see.
You've got to be in the right place at the right time.
You've got to be in the right place at the right time, and the vast bulk of them are only for 15 minutes. So it's no good you ringing up and saying, oh, I've got a tornado outside my back door, and he's only in Kingston, because he could come from Kingston here and he's gone.
Well, that's what you said, that's making it difficult, doesn't it?
Well, yes.
You're just saying they're unskilled observers as well, they look at it and they don't know what to look for.
And then, of course, you see, if
that's frustrating, isn't it? If you're trying to interview somebody who doesn't know what you're sort of looking at.
That's right. And you get two problems, which I used to find that it's up a pretty old wood. You get the problem of the man who thinks he knows the answer, so he interprets it to fit the answer. He interprets the observation to fit the answer. Now, when all these meteorologists look at tornadoes, hey, what they see is the wind going round.
It does go round, doesn't it? So they're right.
Oh yes, yes, it does go round. The wind goes round, there's no doubt about that. Then they put in radar, Doppler radar, which is more in your line of the business, and they say, we can detect it going round. Have a bit of difficulty when you find out about this, because they're usually too far away for the bandwidth to really pick up only one side. They have a lot of difficulty on that.
So they choose with.
Yeah. But as I've pointed out to the meteorological office, I don't think radar can detect wind. It can detect cloud, it can detect rain, and it can detect hail. But what it can't do is detect wind.
Well, it wouldn't work otherwise, would it? If you detect wind.
Yeah.
You don't see anything with it.
Well, that's what I thought, you see. And yet, you see, all the papers in this huge book, which was written basically about tornadoes, it's all based on the fact of looking for the wind.
Just how you got on superfluid helium, by the way. Did somebody ask you about that?
No. Superfluid helium was a simple dropout. Superfluid helium was when I had come to the conclusion that Bragg had got it wrong with his infinite lattice. You see, he said that solids were infinite lattices
right. That
were accidentally broke.
Okay, and you replaced that by something like a metallurgist's view of the sort of lots of crystals.
I found that basically the base form of matter was powder. And what was more, you can't break powder down to single atoms. You see, theoretically you can. But in actual practice you can't. You can grind it down and grind it down, but after a time, when you ground it down, it will amalgamate back again.
Straight away, it
will stick together, and you have a minimum size for a particular temperature. You have a minimum size. But what I found was that the colder it is, the smaller is the minimum size.
Right.
Well, all you have to do with helium is to project this down. It's very low temperature, so it should be virtually monatomic. Should the powder sizes, you then look at argon, and you find out that it also, when it's at the liquid helium temperatures, you know, those sorts of temperatures, is as brittle can be.
Oh right, so it's only just a solid.
But when you get it to just below its melting point, it's as plastic can be. You can't have a crystal of solid argon near its melting point because it just flows under its own weight. Well, basically, helium is simply that. But of course, you see, what I did was saying, well, it could be this. And then I checked, why wasn't it powder? Why wasn't it like any other solid? And in actual practice, it is like any other solid. But it's got so many of its properties all compressed into a very small bit. It sublimes, yes, CO2 sublimes. It produces adhesive powder. Now you won't have come across adhesive powder. The problem we had when we made fuels was that the UO2 powders we made were often very adhesive. And that meant they stuck together. And our problem was, to make them flow, we had to make them non-adhesive. Because if a powder sticks together, it causes no end of problems in a powder handling system.
Yes, it will do that.
Yeah, because it sticks together. the last thing you want is to bring it apart. So we used to have that. So all these sort of things all added together, and once I read the properties of it, and you see, of course, I read the properties as a liquid. because that's what everybody published it as. You see, so I had to keep transferring. What they really meant was fluid at that point, didn't they? They didn't mean liquid, they meant fluid. Now, once you change the word from liquid to fluid, and at the same time, I had deduced that there could only be two forms of liquid crystals, and of course they were fluid crystals. Now, when I first looked at it, I thought they were infinite in one direction, but finite in the other. Because, of course, they were liquids, you see, and the liquids have infinity in them. Well, if you have two drops of a liquid and you put them together, they will add. And you can never stop adding to them. They never fall apart, other than physically knocked apart. But if you put them together, two drops of liquid together, they will always add on. So they have what's called an infinite property. Infinity isn't a big number. Infinity is something different to a big number.
You mean it's kind of endless or something like that?
Yes, yes, it can keep going on ad infinitum kind of thing.
I've got a chocolate one.
You duck in, it's your stuff.
I know, it's my stuff. Yeah, I was wondering if you want to take some as well.
I'll just take one for my good lady. Okay. As a kind of thank offering.
I'm
one gets it down. It's virtually what I would call common sense after a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's like this.
And likewise on liquid crystals, you see. After a while, I found out the man who first got them called them flüssig crystals. And flüssig in German can either mean liquid or fluid. And well.
Most people don't distinguish, do they? Or do they? Is there a distinguish between fluids and liquids?
Well, a lot don't, because you see, they all say that fluids are liquid, but until you get onto a fluidized baked cracker, in which case they know it's Dalton was interesting on that aspect of it, because he didn't refer to gases. He referred to them as elastic fluids.
He referred to gases as elastic fluids?
He referred to gases as elastic.
Is that the word gas had been invented, wasn't it?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so.
It's a relative late form of the word gas.
Well, if it was, but in his papers, he always referred to what we call gas as elastic fluids to distinguish it between inelastic fluids, which was water to him. And don't forget, he basically was a meteorologist as well, which was intriguing.
What was his background, actually? I never looked into tools. He must have had special, you know, like most physicists or engineers or something, or you know, they've got Hillman, they have all cat matter, you know, they have their own special, you know, they've experienced something that other people haven't.
He was a school teacher in Cumbria, and he eventually went to Manchester and worked his way up as a teacher.
He did experiments, presumably?
Oh, he did bits of experiments, but continental wise, he's known for his other. Discoveries, which was colourblindness.
Well, not yet, Dalton.
No, basically he was just a school teacher just up the road from where we live, you know, 20 miles up the road, or even less, 10 miles up the road.
Is he commemorated at all?
Well, just a little backdrop, and the school he taught at has disappeared, but there is another school nearby.
I
should
ask about. I remember asking about liquid and solid hydrogen, but that's difficult to find anything published on.
That's right.
That's presumably solid hydrogen would not be monatomic. So that would mean that.
No, I believe is rigid, but.
So superfluid helium, so-called the finest powder in the universe, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. I've tried to get that put in the Guinness Book of Records, but they didn't like that.
Do you want it put on the internet, by the way? About physics up there.
I enjoyed you know, the bit you sent me of what you put on the internet. That was very good.
It's probing stuff. I'm trying to get, you know, I've got a feeling there might be somebody out there like Hillman. I've got a topic for you. Namely electron microscopy.
Oh, yeah, right. I'll tell you about that.
Good.
That comes under my topic, light without photons. you know, like order without chaos. You see, you said order or chaos when I did it. But it wasn't until you wrote back to me and put my essay was order or chaos that I realised, that means to say, if it's order or chaos, you know what chaos is. But if it's order without chaos, you don't need to know what chaos is because you haven't got it at all. And in actual practice, there isn't such a thing as chaos. When you work it out, what people mean by chaos is always they don't know. Which is very different to saying there is chaos.
That's true, yeah. Have you looked into any of these books on so-called chaos theory?
Not really. Most of them just have no interest to me at all. Because, as I say, most of the people who are interested in chaos theory are interested in the vast universe and so forth. Yeah. Whereas judging if we can't tell what the sun is and so forth, I mean, you say when they were going to land on the moon, there were people like Fred Hoyle said that as soon as they landed on the moon, the thing would disappear under a cloud of dust. And, it just never did. Once you thought about it, well, we had enough of knowledge to know that wouldn't happen in any case. And as I say, on Venus, the funny thing there is that prior to people landing on the moon, so it's prior to 1969, that on Venus there should be liquid something or whatever, which makes the clouds, because on Earth, although you've got stacks of air, the bit you see are the clouds.
Right,
and the clouds are related to the oceans.
Saying kind of clouds without liquid.
Yeah, I would have said you couldn't have clouds without liquid. Now, the only thing that I can say is if Venus is all covered with no liquid, then it's sublime. And solids can sublime. Most things can, but that would provide the equivalent liquid component.
Right. But you don't usually notice the sublimation because of these peculiar conditions.
Most places you don't notice it. I used to generate CO2 in my lab.
Yeah.
And when we generate it, we used to break it down into little bits, chuck it into a container, and I always thought, isn't it funny, when you break it down immediately, it's all rough edges, but when you put it into this container and look through it, there were only little peck holes to look through because it was a glass container, and you had to protect it from blowing up, you could see that it was all smooth. This CO2, and I was chatting with another colleague of mine who'd worked for ICI. Oh, he says, yes, we used to do sublimation of some chemical or other, kind of diastolic chemicals. And he said, we almost used to take bets on this as to whether it was melting or not. But you see, once you look at it my way, it was melting, but it wasn't just melt on the surface.
Yeah, it's just occurred to me, because in nature you don't get this very often, because if things could sublime, then they wouldn't be there. It's kind of artificial.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's why people aren't aware of it.
Yeah. And I mean, so, you know, in theory, on the kinetic theory of sublimation, well, all your windows should have disappeared.
Yeah.
You see? But because they don't melt, they don't disappear. You see, anything that can't melt can't sublime. But that never appears in anything else. All the standard theories say it goes from solid to gas.
So wood doesn't sublime.
Yeah, that's right. Most things don't sublime. But yeah, in theory, on the kinetic style of thing, it should all sublime. I mean, say when they send this stuff out into space, it should all be subliming off like mad. But it doesn't melt, and therefore. It don't sublime either, but that bit has not got into the textbooks.
The point about electron microscopy that Harold Hillman makes is that if you get biological samples, in order for it to work, you they're dehydrated and evacuated.
That's right. Yeah, I think he's dead right on that. I think he's got the right answer. And therefore you see things that aren't there. Yeah,
I did wonder if the same thing wasn't true with them. With particle high people. No, it's all right. It must be a friend of mine sending a fax.
No, I see. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's great. It's one from Harold Hillman.
No.
Oh, I just thought I'd mention that because electron microscopy is a subject where. You've got the same sort of syndrome, haven't you, there are a lot of people, I mean, there's expensive equipment, so you've got a little priestcraft kind of
tending it.
And I did think the same thing maybe happened with particle physicists, you know. And I did find a couple of references to artifacts. But
no more so for me, thank you.
I found a couple of references.
I'll be stopping at every old, between every little chef.
Okay, it's low in capping, actually. He's trying to do something about his review. I haven't had a reply. The trouble is, if there is somebody like Hillman who's got a good critique, you know, because it could be anything with artifacts.
As far as anything I write to you, as I say, what I like is somebody to write out the particular sentence and say why they don't think he's correct. Because, as I say, I'm only a mortal like anybody else.
But
you
might be. How do you know?
Well,
how can you disprove that?
Well, I'm not out to prove that. As far as I'm concerned, I have got plenty of things I could get wrong, and that's it. Now, if you're interested in the sun, and you know, because you'd written to me, I thought, well, I'll read my scrap notes on the sun. You see. See, what I had written donkeys years ago, and I'd written all this before man put his foot on the moon. So it's quite intriguing to see what I say about the moon, not having been there, you know, not having had man on the moon.
Did you get it right?
Oh, nine times out of ten, the only bit where I still have me queries is the bit... On Venus and having no liquid on board, which still puzzles me a little bit. Until I thought, well, it must be sublimation because I followed the Veneer missions and so forth.
I got this 1885 almanac thing.
Oh yeah,
second-hand bookshop. It's got a thing about the sun here. The chap thinks that. So there was a shadow class. He thought only the surface of the sun was in his light.
Well, the best one on the sun.
It's a bit later than Herschel.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely Herschel, and his was given a very bad write-up by people like Hoyle. But they, you see, all thought, as Eddington, who said, "Oh, I don't need to look at the sun. I can tell you all about the sun without looking," because he said it's just gas all the way to the middle. You see, once you say it isn't gas all the way to the middle, mainly solid, you get a funny different story. I will tell you one of the little bits that a friend of mine, who unfortunately now dead, we've looked at, was if you've got the sun there, and it's the cloud part of it is quite substantial. We're not talking
about...
No. This is the bit you see.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's the bit you see. That's the solid bit in the middle, which is quite small relative to the other. Herschel thought it was a lot bigger, and I'm open to the size.
How do you know there's a solid bit in the middle?
You couldn't have gases on the outside. If you only got gas, it'll expand into a vacuum without any sort of problem.
I didn't wonder about that. If the Earth was made completely of water, what would happen then?
It would disappear.
Well, what happened to it?
Just float out into space in a relatively short time.
You just get a bubble?
No, it's just water. No, it should not be able to hold it in.
I mean, like, yeah, I don't know.
No, it wouldn't hold it in.
You sure?
I'm quite sure.
Well, you're going to play with a giant lump of water.
No.
Thousands of miles across
it. The bits where they do play with water in space, have you ever seen them in these spacecraft?
They're just boing around a bit.
Yes,
don't they?
Yes.
Well, that's, they hold together though, don't they?
That's it. It's a boundary.
Well, it holds together. Circles of
what they want to do in space is to get the two blobs of water and put them together and watch them join.
What would happen then?
They just join. Because it's water. Once it's liquid, it will join. Oh, well, what I was going to tell you, the intriguing bit,
okay,
is that gives the X-ray image.
Right, you take an X-ray photo of a star.
Yeah, and when they sent rockets up, they took X-ray images, and they found this was heterogeneous.
How do you focus or whatever for X-ray?
Well, I didn't know exactly how they did this, but they concerned me.
You're taking the word for it, they got it right.
Yeah, I'm taking the word that this was an X-ray image.
Yeah.
This was an X-ray image of this. But what they found was it wasn't that size, it was that size.
Bigger than the actual visual thing, right?
Well, yes. But what me and my friend looked at this, we said, oh yes, it can be that, because you see, in this part, you've got an enormous amount of refraction. And you see, astronomers don't believe in refraction very much at all. In fact, when they did this bending of light, they rejected refraction, which is the simple answer for why stars apparently bend light when they're near the sun.
You're saying it's like a marble surrounded by water.
Yeah.
So you get a magnifying effect.
You get a magnifying effect. But you imagine X-rays, there must be an enormous bend. And you have 93 million miles for this long, but in this part you've got quite a bit. So in actual practice, when you're looking at the X-ray image of the sun, you're not looking at that bit across there, magnified. You're looking at two-thirds or more of the way round. In other words, you're seeing the back of the sun looking at the front. Because it's magnified in this thing.
Right, you mean like this, it sort of comes out? Well,
it actually comes out like that. It
curls much.
Yeah, yes, it'll curl right. It'll come. Well, it will set off from the back and curl right round and eventually come out down here. So we worked out that these X-ray images, no matter, because I noticed they never gave the size of them, but it was always fairly well intimated that they were bigger than the sun itself. And so they thought it all came from outside the sun.
So somebody thought there was some mistake.
Yes, and if you don't tell people too much about this, you see, if you don't put a dimension on that, you're all right, aren't you? No one can say, well, that's a bit peculiar, isn't it? But that's probably what happens. But what you know, just as you can't tell the size of a marble in a fishbowl.
Yes, I mean,
When you've got something like this where the bend could be enormous because of the enormous sizes and pressure, you can imagine the pressure is enormous, because even on Venus the pressure goes up at an enormous rate of knots. It's 50 atmospheres on the surface, and it's only 50 kilometers.
Why should the middle bit generate X-rays at all?
Why? Well, it's pretty warm. So
is that the modern model of the sun is still that it's all gas or helium?
Oh,
fusing away.
Yes, fusing away. Yeah.
So it hasn't occurred to them that the vacuum would suck it away?
Well, apparently not. I've told people from time to time that.
What about the immense gravity, presumably, so with this?
Oh, yes, the immense gravity. I'll suck it in, won't it? It's out of the other side, basically. Can't have gas, no matter if it's in under immense gravity, it's under immense pressure. And of course, the problem is with the kinetic theory is basically you can't have air on Earth, because the kinetic theory depends on a box that's got six sides to it. If you took one side off, the whole theory falls apart. Well, I could tell this at university, and when I ever suggested this, my tutors all got mad.
What's your objection? Okay, part of the kinetic theory is that you've got these things bouncing around, and that's supposed to explain why heat kind of equalizes to them. You know, in other words, like a slow moving one gets heated, gets moved faster by a fast one.
Yeah, it's all assume something else happens. But once you have a system whereby all the molecules in a gas are at the same temperature, well, that's what thermodynamics is about, isn't it? But I may say, you know, you don't have to invent Maxwell's demon. You know, you've heard of Maxwell's demon, haven't you? Well, there you are. You see, they are a bit, and of course. The whole basis of the big diffusion plants we had at Cavenhurst were based partly on that principle. But what people don't know is that principle never worked. And it was all done by practical experiments.
You said that this is uranium hexafluoride?
Yes, the uranium hexafluoride was, both the centrifuging process and so forth, but once you have my system, you have a totally different one, because you've got your...
It didn't work, surely?
No, I didn't work on this room, he said. I didn't work on this room. And that's 235, and that's 238. Now, if you work on those two ratios, you would get a separation like full. But in actual practice, you don't. But what the difference between those two is not these two weights, it's the latent heat of that and the latent heat of that, latent heat 1, latent heat 2. And that's what the difference is in those two latent heats, they're very, very close to one.
You say they're separated by condensation?
Yes, it's a type of condensation, it's this production of multimers. And just occasionally, you do find the heavier isotope has the lower latent heat, and you therefore get the separation in the wrong direction to the kinetic theory. Just occasionally, there are a few, I think, but what was it?
Is that how isotopes are separated? Is this all used the same thing?
We use centrifuges at present.
Iodine or something? Sodium.
There's many different processes used for separating isotopes. But there are just one or two where you can actually distill them apart, and one of them we had, I forget which it was, could have been one of the borons, you know, make boron come and distill that. But the two were the reverse order, and well, of course, they got the wrong answer, didn't they, to start with? But after a while, you accept that the answer's wrong, and you can distill it, particularly as it's all in secret service land, nobody knows. Worth calling, you know, forget about it.
Is this sort of stuff they do at Amersham International?
Well, I never had anything to do with Amersham.
Well, that's just an example of it.
No, I had nothing to do with Amersham, but I dare say they'll know some of these things. But there's all sorts of oddities. The various C2H and C3H, there's quite a lot of molecules in that range, and if you put those into separating columns, and they're generally used thermal means of separating them, some of those can come out the wrong road around. But once you look at it and think of it in latent heat qualities, you have a totally different view to the mass qualities. Those are easily measured, those are not easily measured. Because latent heat is very much dependent on pressures and temperatures, you know, it's got more than one parameter to it.
You're talking about linkage with evaporation as well, aren't
you? That's right.
So you've got large amounts of gas all over the place. Have you got any further little periodic table investigation?
Well, I got as far as I ever wanted to at the time, and basically I was happy with it. I haven't found my notes on that since I did it. All I did was do a full chart of the whole periodic table and point out the possibilities. But basically, all it amounts to is you start off with an octahedron. like that, you add onto that you add tetrahedra, roughly the same size as that piece.
Right.
These tetrahedra are a neutron plus a proton.
Why are they tetrahedral?
Most of
them. Do we say they're roughly tetrahedral?
Roughly tetrahedral. I call them truncated tetrahedra. In other words, I made these things and I just chopped off a little bit at the bottom.
And this will smooth up?
No, well, they will be in real life, but I made them rigid so that I was dealing with it. If you put those onto there, you can make a bigger octahedron, but you've got more gaps in. And you fill those up with little sticks like that called neutrons, the extra neutrons. And you will find that these can fit in. But by the time you get to the third layer, it's getting a bit rich, is this. The gaps are far too big. And in actual practice, you can fit in more tetrahedra. And so you've got 10. What I never solved was why 10. I could do the
sorry, what 10 was it?
There's 10 transition elements. Mm. Now I do know it's 3-3 and 3 and 1, or that's 4. I do know that they're in groups.
You never taught yourself to draw, did you?
Oh well. One can't do everything, can
I?
Yeah, but I do know it's 3, 3, and 1.
That's a shame. It was a nice picture of it too.
Oh well, I can even send you.
That's what you told me.
Somebody wanted to make my periodic table in stained glass. I have a model because the other way I've done it. That's one way of doing it. Of making it up that way. The other way I did it was to make it as a series of Russian dolls. And
hydrogen and helium.
Well, hydrogen's just a plain dot on the system, isn't it? Basically, it will be shaped. I do know that. And helium is actually your first tetrahedra. I say first tetrahedra. In actual practice, it can be made into an octahedron. If you think about it a little bit more carefully, it does work out to be an octahedron.
What if it's diatomic?
No, it's not diatomic at all. It's, no.
Sorry, I thought you stuck to this.
With 14, because 14 is an octahedron plus a cube.
You're a platonist, really.
What, you mean looking at
sacred geometry, kind of thing?
Yeah, but that's where it comes from. Right, I'll take that for Cass, if you don't mind. No, I'm just taking that. And as I say, we really must be on our journeys, because we're more busy.
It's been unfair in a way.
Yeah.
I hope it didn't insult you by all this religious Darwinian stuff.
No, not at all. I've read Darwin. As far as I'm concerned, that's basically a novel. I class it as a novel, but the unfortunate thing is I always associate it with Auschwitz. Because I have read about Auschwitz, and there was no doubt the doctors there thought they were doing right. They really did think they were doing right. And when people came in, they came to be select. And there were two aspects of selection. There were those that were going to be fit to work, and those that were unfit to work. And they went into a chamber, which was called the wash chamber. They never called it anything else. They called it the wash chamber. They took their clothes off to go in. A doctor inspected them, and about 1 in 1,000. Were put back into the working category. So in other words, they had 2 selections before they went into the wash chamber, and then the doctor opened the little hatch on the door when they'd been washed, and he closed it, and he then filled in a death certificate for everybody, and not one of them had died of gas poisoning.
he made up stuff.
Yeah, he made it up. And he was a doctor.
Yes, I am.
The doctor's death certificate. They were all provided with his death certificate. And the others, the third selection that they had, which was Mengele's speciality, was twins. Because what they wanted to do was they wanted to kill off all the unwanted population, and they wanted to breed the good population fast. And so they thought if they could find out how to guarantee twins every time, they will be able to hold the nation fast.
The output of issues.
Yeah.
And they
would
find it if you...
Not too far. Now, all you can say is that when they mated all the did the mating process, which was the other part of the processing system, was that they produced a load of idiots, which is one of the things that shows that within a family, love is the important thing. Whereas they don't, Darwin is, she didn't have this. The one word missing out of the whole of his books was love. You do a search.
I do a computer search.
Yeah. Well, when you said, they only mentioned murder once.
Well, that's only true in the edition I've got.
Yeah, well, no, I was just going to say, well, yes, but what you've divided out is what did the others know? And you'll find out that he was a complete blank as to why anything died.
You talk about an individual death or a species?
You wanted every individual has to die. And his snag was, you see, he thought everything could live forever. But I don't think he believed his story. I don't think he believed it at all by the time he finished.
He thought that creatures were naturally immortal.
Well, his story gives them natural immortality.
You talk about a species or just one?
Well, he couldn't have an end to anything.
I think he was aware of old age.
Yeah.
You were misrepresenting him.
No. I don't think he believed in evolution at all towards the end. Once he thought about all the consequences of it and what it meant, he had no more idea of it than anybody else. And it's only people have said, he was right.
What about the arguments about the geological time periods?
He pinched that from Gaia.
That's right.
Yeah. But I mean, say, the story of man coming from monkeys was done by the pygmies long before him. The pygmies have that story.
Yeah, I don't think, it wouldn't surprise me if Darwinism, there were Chinese people.
Yeah.
There's nothing particularly difficult about it. Once you've got there, there's a lot of time.
That's right, yeah. You always have this one. Once upon a time, a long time ago, as they say, when somebody says to me, a million years ago we had a big bang or whatever it's supposed to have happened, I say, well, yeah, there's plenty of stories about once upon a time, a long time ago.
The big bang is a creation.
That's why I'm not very interested, basically, in projecting back more than where we have got actual records of. In other words, when I look at the sun, I don't say what the sun was like at all. I'm saying what the sun is like. And that was what Herschel looked at. Once somebody said the sun is all gas, then they were sunk.
You're talking about the same person, Herschel, as the one who discovered Uranus?
Yes, yes. Oh, it's a... I got his original papers out. I actually filmed a lot of them. I put them on the panel projector. I don't know whether I've got the
good quality in that to read them.
Oh yes, I've got the Leeds University Library. But
you've just photocopied them, please.
Yeah, I effectively photocopied them, but I put it on 35mm. I did myself. Probably be for all the data photocopied on a big scale.
Well, you've got a sort of slideshow.
Oh, I would have if I could find it. But, yes, and I read the things through. But I'll give you one example which intrigued me most about Herschel. He looked at Jupiter, and he did quite a bit of work on Jupiter. He said the funny thing about Jupiter is that it's not round, it's oval. And he looked at it, and to prove it was oval and not his eyes that were wrong, because he knew about his thickness, he rotated himself around the eyes. He said he must have been in some awkward positions to rotate, because of course he was out in his garden at Slough.
He was horizontal.
But he rotated himself around to see that Jupiter stayed oval in the same direction all the time.
What's your explanation of that?
No problem with that. I think that's an easy one. Say it's round in the middle, doesn't matter what shape. We'll say it's a pure sphere. You put gases round it, but the gases are some distance around. They're not close in again. They're like the Sun. They're like Venus. They're like the Earth. They're like the Sun.
I guess it's still further out.
Got 5 kilometres, and then you finish with clouds. Venus, you've got 50 kilometres, and you finish with clouds. This has probably got 200 kilometres or more, and you finish with clouds, because it's always called a gas planet. But it's not gas. It's got a solid centre, but what they do know is it's spinning its day is 10 hours.
Well, that's what you see from the clouds.
That's right. That's what you see from the cloud. They're spinning around in 10 hours at that size. Gosh, man, nipping around.
Yes,
and it's called centrifugal force.
Yes, I know. I'm happy about that, because this is rotational relativity idea. Like, we're on this planet, and intellectually, I think relative to the Sun, it's spinning around, but from our point of view, it's static, isn't it?
That's only relativity. That's straightforward. It's like I tell people about one of my little ditties on relativity. It's quite straightforward. You go to a cricket match, okay, and the man hits the ball, and it rolls up against the palings at the end, and you say, 4. But your pal next door to you is sat next door to you, and he is blind. And he has a totally different timescale for your call. Because he
waits for the thing for the sound.
He can only detect by sound. Once you look at a cricket match by sound, it's a different cricket match altogether. Might get the same score, but it is a different cricket match, because it's all happening at a different time.
I mean,
if you
imagine you're standing on Jupiter, okay, and you consider Jupiter as being not spinning, you've got the Sun going around it, you see. So the Sun could be pulling out gravitationally.
Oh no, no.
Why not?
No, not for that speed.
It would go around rather fast, wouldn't it? The Sun would go around.
Yeah.
It accepts absolute rotational.
It's just rotating.
That's what they always say. I was just thinking, if you're standing on Jupiter, you're not conscious of it rotating.
Oh, you wouldn't be conscious.
But you're
not conscious of the Earth.
You just see the Sun zipping around it.
Yeah.
If there was no Sun there, would Jupiter bulge? No, Jupiter's right in the middle of nothing.
Yeah, Jupiter will bulge just the same, because it's spinning too fast. It's the first one we got that's spinning fast enough to produce this bulge.
That's true. I'm
happy
about that.
The troposphere is. I mean, so that paper is sent by Ransom. He pointed out that the troposphere was different. Now, of course, there's the two things that work against it. One is the tropics are spinning faster, but they're also hotter than the poles. So you've got both a density effect and a spinning effect just on the troposphere. Well, there you are. I really must be off.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
I'll wrap it in this.
Alright.
Okay, then.
Great.
Well, I'm pleased to have met you. And as I say, in due course, I'll send you my notes on the Sun, which are all in a big scrapbook. with bits and pieces of photographs, and if there's any particular ones you want to see in more detail, I'll send you those on afterwards. Right. But,
let's get the biology.
No. No, I've got that.